just gets worse and worse.
Actually, it doesn't. It's Mike Wimacher with you here on WMAY on this Friday, April the 5th. And I made a wrong statement at the top of the show. I forgot technology exists. I was like, oh, you know, we will not be joined by Johnny Molson today. But yet, here we are from the luxurious, is it the Minneapolis studios today that we have?
We are in our Minneapolis penthouse suite here.
Okay.
Overlooking the beautiful Twin Cities.
Yeah, I forgot that we have all these satellite studios. I forgot the budget that this show actually does have. So my apologies for that. So everyone, ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Molson, thank you for joining me this morning, sir.
People always come to your show for accurate news and honesty.
If they come here for news, period, they've come to the wrong place. If they come to this show for news, unless it's monkey news. We are very accurate in our reporting of monkey news, but anything outside of that, not so much. Speaking of monkey news, did you see, I had something else written down, but quickly, yesterday we discussed there is one of those TikTok time travelers who said a bunch of stuff's happening in 2024. And according to this particular time traveler, on June 4th or June 5th, the first monkey-chimp hybrid will be shown, and it'll be able to communicate with both monkeys and humans. So looking forward to that.
I don't know enough to know the full difference between a monkey, a chimp, a gorilla, a baboon. In my mind, they're all monkeys.
Right. Well, I take it back. It wasn't monkey chimp. It was a human chimp hybrid. My apologies. I misspoke.
A human chimp. Okay.
Yes, a human chimp hybrid is coming up in June, according to the TikTok.
Roddy McDowell is what you're talking about.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what's going to transpire. And it's so funny. An individual called in and said, well, if that comes true, we will immediately be on the monkey or the chimp human hybrids cabinet. Because for years, you and I have been ahead of the curve at Monkey Monday. So we're yes. In. If the human-chimp hybrid overlords take over, we're going to be safe. We'll be fine. That's from what I understand, according to the caller.
No, they understand. That's why we've been making these moves for all these years.
Yes.
Of endearing ourselves to our future overlords.
That is correct. Moving on, though, you do a lot of traveling, as well as myself, going into the bigger cities. And it used to be taxi cabs. Now it's obviously Uber, different ride shares of Lyft. Well, new research out of the University of Illinois Chicago finds that 1/3 of rideshare drivers reported being involved in a crash while on the job. Doesn't that seem a little high to you?
It does seem a little high. I mean, I guess my next question would be, is that a consistent ratio with taxi drivers? I mean, I guess it stands to reason anybody who is professionally driving and on the road all day probably has a higher chance of getting into an accident. That being said, you shut the door behind you knowing that you've got a 33% chance of getting
right.
T-boned.
Yeah, that's not great. The study analyzed survey responses from 277 rideshare drivers who self-reported their crash history. Results show that cell phone use, driving, because that's part of it too. Have you ever noticed that? Like, focus on getting me to my destination before you start setting up your next pickup. That always kind of throws me for a loop where they're like scrolling through as they're driving, like, okay, well, I'm going to drop this person off here. Where's my next fare? That always kind of threw me off a little bit when I'm in a rideshare.
And I've certainly seen it where they've got one phone that is controlling their Uber app, and then another phone, you know, they're getting calls from their girlfriends and whoever else, bookies.
Right.
And he's like, man, what are you negotiating up here?
Also, they report driving while tired, understandable, or navigating unfamiliar roads increase the likelihood of a collision. There's another factor at play, though. They say you've got a stranger entering your vehicle. They may be unruly. They may be drunk. So it may be your fault for the crash, depending upon your behavior, which is why you should ascribe to the Johnny Molson way of things of don't interact with them at all. It's just an exchange. You don't have to carry on a conversation.
Man, that is a thankless job to be an Uber driver when you think about just the knuckleheads that have to get in the back seat, and you probably are constantly on edge.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying have a rider who appears to be on the verge of vomiting or passing out in the back seat can be a serious disruption to the driver, especially because it's happening in their own vehicle. unlike the cabbies back in the day, which was still kind of their vehicle, but not really. This is the thing that they use on a day-to-day basis, and the last thing they want is your vomit back there. Makes no sense. Yeah. They say, looking ahead, the authors suggest better pay rates or a larger percentage of the fare going to the drivers can improve the fatigue issues that many drivers face. So, yeah.
Well, some news from our Minneapolis studios here, which is one of the prime reasons that I'm here, is to report on this and do some more investigation. And Minneapolis is one of a handful of cities that is banning Uber. And
really?
Probably the taxi people have banded together and said, we don't like this. And so it's right now going back and forth here. But there, you know, I mean, from you can look at it so many different ways, from the wages side. You're just an independent contractor doing your own thing. The insurance side, the who do you complain to side if something goes wrong. I mean, there's just while Uber and Lyft have done a lot of things, there's still some holes in this experiment.
Yeah, definitely. Very much so. And you even had that long kind of back and forth where all you were doing is attempting to tip an Uber driver, and it took you, what, a year and a half to get around to it?
That was I found that fun, though. That was really entertaining.
Yes, it was. So just know that if you're getting into an Uber or Lyft, chances are a 33% chance of the individual who is driving you around has gotten into an accident while being an Uber or Lyft driver. So,
but has lived to tell about it. So,
right, exactly.
You've got a seasoned warrior.
Correct. So they know how to react in case it were to happen again. So no need to worry. No alarms to go off whatsoever. You'll be fine. Trust me. You'll get there, even though if they're using 3 cell phones while they're driving you to your destination. It is Mike Wimacher and Johnny Molson with you here on WMAY.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
It is, Boomhauer, and the things you find on the internet are vast and, at sometimes, interesting. It is Mike Wimacher with you, joined by Johnny Molson from our Minneapolis studios.
Good morning.
And there is an article that I happened across from Slate, where a woman writes an entire essay about how cutting in line is actually okay, and how she's...
How does she justify this? This is incredible.
Yeah, and how she's perfected it. All right? So I'll lay it on you, and 217-629-7970 if you want to chime in as well. Here's the situation. She says, the first time I cut in line, I wasn't really thinking about it. I was in Las Vegas on vacation and had come across a book signing for Suzanne Somers.
Right. Okay, I'm tracking with you.
Okay. She goes, I had a little bit of a connection to Somers because a few years before, in the early aughts, I was editor-in-chief of the American Breast Cancer Guide, and Somers gave us an exclusive cover story about how she treated her breast cancer with a mistletoe extract that was not FDA-approved.
All of this is perfectly reasonable. Please, keep going.
Okay. Yes, exactly. Determined to meet her, I walked to the front of the line and said to the person who was about ready to meet Ms. Somers, saying, hi, I have to say a hello to Susan because I was the editor-in-chief of a magazine she was in. I'll only take a minute. How?
That's an incredible flex. So you have to really have some cred before you can just go break in line, right? You got to have a reason. Is that what she's saying?
Right. And that's what she gets to. But how incredibly just brazen and kind of just look at me of saying, hi, I know you've been waiting here for a while, but I was an editor-in-chief of a thing called a magazine, and I've talked to Susan before, so please, I must talk to her before you, is basically what she's saying.
I need to cut to the front of the line here to meet Debbie Gibson. We're engaged in my mind.
Right, exactly. I have very intimate knowledge of her from her Playboy appearance, so I really need to get in there. She says, the woman grimaced, but let me through. She says, Suzanne was gracious. She remembered being in the magazine because at the time, no other consumer publication had wanted to cover her because of her controversial medical treatment. She insisted on signing a book for me and gave me a hug, providing positive reinforcement for my little bit of bad behavior. So now not only is she saying it's acceptable to cut, but since she was rewarded for cutting, then it's perfectly acceptable going forward because she got rewarded in this particular instance by getting a hug from Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, it didn't go wrong, so it must be right. This reminds me of the rock concert groupies who just have this really a very innate ability to just walk through and say, I'm with the band, and security doesn't, you know, if you walk in confidently and you've got a vest on, you can pretty much walk anywhere. That's what this sounds like to me.
It's very fake it till you make it. But here's what she said. She said, but she asked the question, why had the person I cut in front of let me do it? She said, people are just unlikely to make a big deal about someone cutting a line, even if they feel irked.
Right.
She says, I think cutting at the front of the line also helped. The woman I stepped in front of was about to get her book signed anyway. If I had picked a different point of intrusion at the middle or end of the line, whoever I had cut in front of would feel less optimistic about her chances of getting in.
Okay, so she only inconvenienced one person. I don't agree with that. She inconvenienced the whole line.
Correct. Her time that she took with Suzanne Summers is time taken away from the rest of the line. So saying, well, the reason why I cut that person is because they knew they were going to get it. Had I cut in the back of the line, then somebody may have gotten even more upset. She says, here's the other part of it. And this was actually from a study published in 1978. She said, when I asked to cut the line, I used the word because, which can have persuasive powers. According to a study back in 1978, they showed that giving a reason is the reason people will let you cut in line ahead of them. In that particular experiment, completed at the City University of New York, a researcher tried different tactics for cutting ahead of someone to use a copy machine, saying because I'm in a rush or simply because I have to make copies, increased their chances of being let through.
Is it increasing their chances, or are we just a gracious people who say, oh, you're in a hurry? That's fine. Go ahead. I'm not in a rush. I mean, I will do that at the grocery store. It's like, I'm not going anywhere. Go ahead and cut in front of me. It's not a big deal. So I don't know that it's – yeah, this her whole premise is flawed here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think part of it is the gracious nature of people of if someone gives a reason, if they've gone that far, even if it's a lie – majority of us will be like, okay, that's fine. Like, if I don't have anywhere to be, it's not that big a deal. Or if I know I'm going to get into whatever event it is, regardless, that's fine. They said chances improved in this study as well when the person asking to cut in line was a woman. The odds also increase if you show that you require minimal effort or less time. That's why the words, I have a quick question, can work to cut the line at a store or a bank. So instead of waiting in line, just walk straight up to the teller. Oh, I'm sorry, I have a quick question. This will only take a moment.
And people, ladies, if you unbutton the top button of your blouse, then you're guaranteed to get in line.
Right, exactly. She says, I've talked to people over the years about me cutting a line, and most tend to agree that they would let someone with one item go ahead of them in a supermarket, but they would also draw the line at more than a few items. Giving a medical reason also helps her. Now she's blatantly lying of giving a medical reason.
Right.
She says, I have to admit, line cutting has come in handy even in non-emergencies, like when my daughter was sporting a rash after an overnight school trip and I got her a doctor's visit without an appointment before a holiday weekend. Now she's just boasting about being a line cutter. What a weird flex. She goes, but she does say, I'm always polite, I offer a reason, and I cut as close to the front as I can, as if that makes any of this better.
Do you mind if I cut in line? I have highly contagious chlamydia that anyone can catch within 6 feet of me.
Yes, I have the rare airborne chlamydia. Pardon me. She goes, isn't it human nature to use every legal tool at our disposal to get ahead in life? Think about it. When you're waiting in a long line for a movie or a restaurant and see a friend higher in the queue, don't you usually jump in next to them? No. Just because I see you doesn't mean I'm going to use your place in line to benefit me.
Gosh, I hope not.
You're just being an a-hole, I think.
Yeah.
She says, I can think of... She did say there was one time, though, where the cutting the line did not work out for her. And it is the most Karen thing ever of this particular woman here. I hate to kind of put that label on her, but it seems that way to me with her boasting about all this line cutting. The one time it didn't work, though, was she joined meetup.com and learned of a big toddler party at Gymboree. And she was late to sign up, but tried to get in anyway because her daughter wanted to play and she needed to make new mom friends. But she was booted out because she actually had not made the reservation. So karma eventually caught up with her. But when it comes to kind of just, I don't know, be courteous and don't worry about it. Unless you have an absolute necessity or reason that you need to get somewhere or your kid's about to have a absolute meltdown or whatever it may be, don't be a butthead like this person.
Airborne chlamydia.
Yes, if you have airborne chlamydia, that is yet another reason. Or if you have, you know, an intimate relationship with the person who is signing the autographs in your mind, that's another valid reason.
This lady is promoting anarchy. I don't agree with this.
Yeah, I don't either. I was just like, what are you doing? Like, I don't think just because you think it's okay, the rest of us do. I'm pretty sure the rest of us would say, yeah, not here. And I give her credit, though. She goes big. She goes to as close to the front of the line as she can. She doesn't bother with the people in the middle or the back of the line. Absolutely ridiculous. It is Mike Wimacher, joined by Johnny Molson here with you on this Friday, April 5th. Thanks for stopping by. 217-629-7970 is the phone number. Debuting a new segment here of big deal, little deal, or no deal from this particular story, because everyone is all up in arms about this. It's a high school English teacher from Ohio. And the reason why everyone's all up in arms is because, get this, Johnny, she called out of work sick for 2 days to attend a concert in Nashville, Tennessee. What? Who would ever do such a thing of using sick days instead of vacation days to be able to go on a mini trip somewhere? How dare she?
Man, I think everybody in some capacity has maybe fudged a sick day. I mean, they might be, you know, it might be a headache where they could have made it in, but they go, you know, and so, I don't know. Is it really? Yeah, I don't know that this is a big deal.
The woman is also a member of the Board of Education at another nearby school district. Oh, my goodness. Board members voted to keep her on unpaid leave until their next meeting, when they will vote on her termination.
Oh, jeez.
So they went straight like, no, they said she falsified sick leave and told several colleagues she was attending a concert in Nashville. Who ratted her out? So 217-629-7970 is the phone number.
The gamble. If you're going to fake a sick day,
right,
and you get caught, there's going to be ramifications.
Truth.
I don't know that termination is the ramification.
Yeah, you're right. There is. And what are you doing? Couple things here. All right. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a little deal. I don't think it should be something that you're able to do on the regular, right? Or it's not something you should do. I think you bring up a great point, Johnny, of if you're going to take a sick day, you got to think things through, right? I know those of us who may or may not have, at times, to your point, a headache or something you could have fought through, but you stay home, you immediately then go on lockdown. You don't leave your house. Like, even if you need to go grab something, it's like, nope, I can't because I called in sick and I don't want to be seen out in public. And you definitely shouldn't advertise it to work colleagues because you can't trust all those people.
Yeah, wasn't there that woman a handful of weeks ago went to that Taylor Swift concert, and she was being interviewed on the news and threw a jacket over her head because she knew that if anybody caught her.
Exactly, if someone had caught her. So 217-629-7970 is a phone number. Little deal, big deal, no deal. Hi, you're on WMAY.
Where's her teacher's union at with this? I can't believe she's not in a union, and they're like, you can't just up and fire somebody. There's zero tolerance things, drug use, whatever, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Inappropriate something with a kid, I get all that stuff, or stealing something, whatever, but just to turn around and say, yeah, you call it in two, and then you put it on Instagram, which, by the way, I'm guessing is how she got caught. She probably put it on Instagram, having a great time concert. But.
Well, there may be that. We don't know for certain. Also, the fact that she told colleagues that she was going to be going to a concert and then called in sick, there may have been someone who was not a big fan of her teaching style that could have ratted her out as well. But, yeah, I never thought about the teachers' union and how they feel about
all
this.
Well, that just seems a bit harsh. I mean, come on. You know, you're going to go back through everybody that ever called in that school saying, okay, where's your doctor's note?
It's very true. Thanks. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, that's a good point brought up there. It does seem they went like 0 to 100 on this, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's and that's the thing. So if somebody, if the public is outraged, I think the public needs to check themselves and say, okay, we've all fudged a sick day here and there. But yeah, I mean, if you fudge a sick day and you get caught, things happen, I guess.
Right. There needs to be some type of repercussion because you have to be smarter about it. I think the fact that she was, I don't want to say boasting, but it seems like she was boasting to colleagues of like, haha, suckers, I'm going here and I'm not having to use vacation days. That probably didn't really sit well with some other teachers as well. You probably shouldn't publicize that you're taking sick time and using it for a vacation. I understand people getting a little upset with that, but I think they're going to the extreme. Interesting. There was a student, I don't know if you've seen this, Johnny, but there was a young person, like a, I would say, middle schooler, who was going to miss school because of going to a Bruce Springsteen concert, but he actually somehow found a way to get up to the front row and had Bruce Springsteen sign a form saying, hey, allow him to be, you know, absent from school because he's going to see the boss.
That's pretty remarkable.
I was going to say, had she gotten that kind of signature from whatever artist she went to, would that hold some weight depending on the artist? Because we don't know the concert that she went to. That's the other part of this.
That's the missing element here is if she went to a stupid concert, then it might be a fireable offense.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like if she just went to see some, no offense, some local Nashville artist or something, Then yes, I would be more inclined to be like, then she probably should be fired. But if it was a decent concert, if she went to, you know, a pretty good band, you know, like the kid going to Springsteen, right. I think then yes, you have, a different conversation there.
Like if she went to the Eagles or a Jimmy Buffett tribute band.
Oh, God.
There's just no, you don't want her around children.
Oh, no. Anything having to do with Margaritaville was involved, immediate termination. That's just,
exactly.
That is, yeah, exactly. If she's going to see, especially if she's going to see the Eagles with Vince Gill now in it, then right. It's bad enough you like the Eagles to begin with, but you're not even seeing the real Eagles. You're seeing the faux Eagles, and now you're out of there. So I think you bring up a good point. So we'll have to wait and see if she gets terminated or not and what concert it was that she actually went to. It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY. We will take a break for news. We come back. Speaking of concerts, a band that has done their farewell concert, Kiss, made some news yesterday. Did you hear about this, Johnny, about the big $300 million that Kiss just made yesterday? It is Mike Wimacher, joined by Johnny Molson. Live from the Minneapolis studios here on this Friday, April 5th. 217-629-7970 is the phone number as we wrap up the 7 o'clock hour. Yesterday, Johnny, Kiss made a cool $300 million just yesterday was announced because Kiss...
Did they invest in Truth Social too?
Yes, that's exactly what they did. That's exactly. Gene Simmons like, this is great. I'm going to put all my money in this and then I'm going to sell as quickly as I can. No, they did sell something though. They sold their catalog, brand name, and IP to the Swedish company Pop House Entertainment Group in a deal estimated to be over $300 million. That, you know, we're seeing more and more of these older artists selling off at least their catalog, but this is pretty much everything Kiss is selling off to this company, and $300 million just seems low to me.
You know, it does. I'm not a big Kiss fan, but it does seem for the catalog, the likeness. I mean, I guess, you know, the stuff you can do in perpetuity with that seems like a pretty low payday.
Especially for a guy like Gene Simmons, who also says how great a businessman he is on things.
Right.
Now, this Pop House Entertainment, by the way, co-founded by a member of ABBA. I did not realize that. Bjorn Ulvaeus. I may be mispronouncing that, whatever it may be.
I think he's the second B.
He's not the third B, the second B. He's not the first B, he's the second B.
Yeah, right.
So basically what is transpiring, everyone thought this was coming because during their last concert, their farewell tour in December at Madison Square Garden, they ended the show by revealing digitized avatars of themselves. Mm-hmm. And that is what they say is going to be something going forward. One of the spokesperson for Pop House said there's going to be a biopic that that Kiss is going to get. There's also going to be some documentaries, a Kiss experience, and of course, the Avatar show. Which, is that really a concert?
When it's that doesn't sound fun to me.
When it's the avatars that come out there, are you basically, aren't you just watching a cartoon at that point?
Like I think, yeah.
I mean, I understand the concept because ABBA has done it. The ABBA Voyage show in London, in which fans could attend a full concert by the Swedish band in their heyday as performed by their own digital avatar. But I don't think you're actually seeing a concert. You're just seeing a recording of some dumb cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the shared event with a crowd of people all cheering and having a good time. You know, the thing that's interesting to me about Kiss and I think Bob Dylan did something similar to this, right? Sold his catalog. And
yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Some older artists are doing that, and I get it. You can't take it with you, and you know, get the paycheck while you can, and give it to your heirs or whatever. But what kind of stipulations exist to the new owners? I mean, what can you and can you not do now with Kiss's intellectual property?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. And, you know, they even alluded to it before the end of the tour, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. And Kiss is one of those bands, because of the makeup, you could keep that going in perpetuity of, hey, this is Kiss, even though none of the original members are in the band, just a bunch of people in the Kiss makeup and having the Kiss costumes. But then that runs into the question too of, then you're not really seeing Kiss. Like, it's Kiss, but yeah, it's not Kiss. And so I don't know it, and I don't know what it means for their merchandising. Did they keep the rights to that? I mean, they gave the IP away. We know that Kiss slaps their name on anything, Kiss coffins, Kiss whatever. They have the Kiss army. Mm-hmm. I just thought that $300 million is a little low. And the whole Avatar thing, I don't know, man. I guess it does give you an opportunity to kind of, if you are an individual who is too young to see them in their heyday in these situations. But I'm always very leery about that, because then all of a sudden it brings into, well, what about the Ramones as holograms? It's like, I love the Ramones, but I don't know if I'm paying big money to see Ramones avatars up on stage playing their songs.
You know, even tribute shows, and they're getting bigger and bigger.
Yes.
You're seeing these regional touring companies for like Kiss and Queen.
Yes.
Has this really big touring company that goes out and does a tribute show, and I think there's a Prince one like that too.
Well, it's even not just at
guys
the state
in a bar doing a tribute, but it's a big show, and it's neat, it's novel, but it's just like, it's not them. So I don't know what I'm watching.
Yeah, I mean, even the State Fair, right? I mean, the State Fair brought that Michael Jackson tribute band, and that was like there was a hit. Like, you couldn't even get into the beer tent because everybody was like, oh my God, it's the Michael Jackson tribute. And you're right, you get conflicted of like, they're very good, I'm not diminishing what they do. But it's, what am I watching? Am I watching someone singing live karaoke? Like, what exactly is it?
Right. I mean, that's kind of what it feels like to me. I mean, it's fun, it's novel, but I don't know that I walk across the street and buy a ticket for it.
Correct. And, you know, to your point about the older artists selling off their catalog, I understand that. But at the same token, you look at it and you go, okay, then all of a sudden is Bob Dylan, you know, who is always kind of anti-establishment, being used for a Ford commercial. You know, I'm always leery of that. Like, I get it that once you sell it, they can use it for whatever they want to, but I'm always a little leery of that, of like, do they fully know what's going on, or can stipulations be put in there? I don't know.
That seems to be inevitable, and we've seen this happen with the Beatles library getting sold and things like that, where you go, suddenly they're showing up in places where you go, I don't know that was the intent of that song or the artist who wrote the song, or the, you know, just, some artists just aren't cool with it being used commercially like that.
Yeah.
Then there are others, you know, if you're Smash Mouth, you get every penny you can squeeze out of that lemon.
All-star forever, my friends. All-star forever. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because it's not just the older artists when we think of, you know, Dylan and now Kiss or whatever, but recently it was even the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which you don't think of as an older artist, but we'll touch upon something next hour of albums turning 30 this year, or albums that came out in 1994, and the Chili Peppers were even, you know, 91 was Blood Sugar Sex Magik. They had another album before that. Like, they were around since 1988. They recently sold the rights to their catalog for a substantial amount of money. And you think, what the hell? And then you look and you go, well, yeah, I guess, you know, they've been around for over 30-some years, 36, almost 40 years. And you think, maybe, you know what? Maybe that's the right way. But it's hard for you to process because that's a band you grew up with.
It's funny when you see TV commercials for, I don't know, retirement facilities or just something, you know, old, something old people centric.
Right, yes.
And inevitably, the music is sort of this 1920s jitterbuggy kind of yada-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And I'm like, man, that's not who's retiring right now.
It's no.
People who listen to Zeppelin and the Stones, and you're going to have to update your music a little bit.
Well, you know, I don't mean to poo-poo the particular industry in which I'm currently working, but the 80s, 90s, and now thing, it's like, you may want to update that to the 90s, 10s, and now, because
yeah. And there's two decades, there's almost three decades under that now.
Right, exactly. It's like, the stuff from 2001 is now 23 years old. It's been drinking for 2 years now. Yeah. May want to update that a little bit. So.
And dude, yeah, the 80s, that's, you're almost two generations away from the 80s at this point.
That to me is the,
right?
That's the craziest part to me of, I look at things that came out in like 1987, and in a couple of years, it's like, good Lord, that's going to be 40 years old coming up. Like, holy crap. That's it's hard for me to process that. In fact, next year's 40 years of the first Back to the Future, which I know you don't care about because you never saw it, but it's still a big thing for a lot of other people.
I've heard it's a good movie.
It is actually pretty decent. If you get the time and your very busy schedule, you may want to check out the movie that you've not seen for 40 years.
I'll do that as soon as I see Ghostbusters.
Oh, perfect. It'd be a great double feature for you to never watch. I look forward to that. It is Mike Wimacher and Johnny Molson with you here on WMAY. Welcome in. Final hour of the program on this Friday, April 5th. Mike Wimacher joined by Johnny Molson. When I go to Vegas, I don't know about you, Johnny. Have you been to Vegas? I guess is the first question.
I have.
Okay. When I'm there, I don't do a lot of gambling. I'm more there to take in the sights and all the other things. So I don't know if I believe in luck or unlucky when it comes to games of chance. But I will say that this particular gentleman, I think, has got an unbelievable luck streak going on. This is a gambler who won three jackpots in 3 hours at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas last week.
Son of a gun.
So I immediately start to question of, one, is Caesar's Palace cool with him ever coming back into the casino? Because that doesn't, I mean, I understand they're games of chance. Yeah. And he was doing him, and it's hard to fix the slot machines. Trust me, I watch the Ocean movies. I know how difficult it is to do that. But it just seems a little weird to me to win three jackpots in 3 hours. And oh, by the way, he won again early Thursday morning.
I mean, that does seem like a good reason to ask questions or check the machines or do something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a game of chance, and the chance just happened to strike him three times. You know, you hear those stories of somebody who wins the lottery and then 8 months later they win the lottery again. You know, I mean, it's weird. It's not fair, but it's just that's the rule of random.
Yeah. This time around, the guy hit a $692,500 jackpot on a Dragon Link slot machine. That's similar to the one that got, that he won last week. Now, here is the thing, though. I didn't realize, if I do gamble, I'm not a big slot machine person. It just is boring to me. I know they've tried to up the game with all the different themed ones, which always seems weird to see, like, Wizard of Oz slot machine. You're like, oh, match the ruby slippers. I'm like, is that something we're doing here? But apparently we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that there's one for everybody, too. It's like, here's the one for Tom Selleck fans.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any sense.
The Magnum P.I. slot machine. Yeah.
Yeah, when you get down to it, it's three or five spinning wheels that will land in a certain order.
Or you get the bonus game, you know, with the match the mustaches and win extra money. but here's the thing. I didn't realize, I guess, because I'm one, not a high roller, and two, I don't gamble very often. He placed a $2,500 bet on the spin. So just that one spin.
$100. Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine just for a moment of every spin of a slot machine being $2,500 that you just go, hit the button, hope for the best?
I can think of maybe in the time that gambling has become legal in Illinois, maybe three times I've just, I don't know, stuck $10 in a thing at the gas station just for fun. And even that turns my stomach. It's like, oh, what did I just do there? That was $10.
Right, let alone $2,500.
Oh, man.
He placed a $2,500 bet on the spin, winning a jackpot topped the roughly $668,000 that he won during last week's three-win streak. So he was feeling it, and now between the big win Thursday and the three wins in a row, the guy's got $1.2 million. Just
and what the heck do you do? I mean, you really can't do anything. I mean, if it was blackjack, they could say, hey, we think you're maybe counting cards or something,
right?
And have an excuse to keep him out. I don't know that there's a. I don't think they have a leg to stand on.
Unless they're seeing him, you know, put in some type of card or something. But it seems like the Caesars Entertainment spokesperson told USA Today that, quote, the guest declined to publicize a name and asked to remain anonymous. The company said that the player has had, quote, an incredible run. Unquote. Yes, I would think so. But yeah, you're right. If it was, even if it's roulette, you can maybe say, does he have a magnet? You know, whatever it may be. How is he doing all this? If it's some type of table game, craps, does he have a loaded die? Whatever. But on a slot machine, I don't know if they can kick him out. But I guess they don't really want to of how much $2,500 spins has he lost previously? I guess is the question.
How many times, yeah, when you've been in Las Vegas, how many times, and it happens here too, when you're at a restaurant and you see somebody sitting over there at the thing, and you look at them and go, you shouldn't be doing that. You can
Correct.
Just, you can tell they have that haggard look,
yes.
Like this is going to mean rent or no rent.
Correct.
And I don't know what you do. You look at them and you go, I can tell just by looking at you, you shouldn't be sitting there right now, and your life is about to get worse.
That,
and what do you do with those poor people?
That's the dichotomy of Vegas that most people, that they don't show in the what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Because yeah. You're having that great time, you're having fun or whatever, and you're right, you walk through the casino floor, and even in the nicest of casinos, there's still those one or two people where you go, yeesh, I hope they hit something, because if not, it's going to be bad for them and their family going forward.
You know, you go down there for breakfast and it's 8:30 in the morning, yeah. And you can tell that somebody has been sitting there since 10 o'clock the previous night. I mean, they look like they're about to fall over, and you just go, oh, my Lord, you've got to get help right now.
Yes. Or you walk through at about 4 in the morning, like maybe you've had a lot of fun. You went to a show or whatever and then had like a late night at a speakeasy, and you're walking through to get to your room, and there's inevitably that person with just a whole like six pack of Red Bulls next to them, yeah. That has been up for 24 straight hours thinking this next spin is going to be the one, not realizing that even if they hit the big jackpot, they're just about to break even. That's about it. Yikes.
Nothing good happens.
No.
Yeah, if you don't go in with a mentality of, all right, here's $300 and this is my fun and I'll lose it and that's all right, I'm having a good time. If you go in there thinking that this is a money-making thing, you are going to be so sad.
Yes, yes. And I would not recommend, despite this guy's epic run of luck, I would not recommend putting $2,500 for one spin on a slot machine. Probably not a real great investment. It is Mike Wimacher here with Johnny Molson. We'll take a break for news. We come back. The most overrated superhero of all time. It is Mike and Molson with you here on this Friday, April the 5th. Appreciate you taking a little time to join us here this morning. I know, well, I'm a big superheroes fan. Johnny, you kind of tolerate the superheroes, I think.
Only when I need them.
Okay, yes. Yes, everybody gets one, as it were.
Right.
And so 217-629-7970 is the phone number. The most overrated superhero is what we'll be discussing, because I saw this come across the wire today. And I guess I get it, but I don't get it. And the fact that Superman, right, everyone loves themselves some Superman, but I find him the most overrated superhero and the most boring one in the history of superherodom. But a Superman issue of Action Comic number one, which introduced the world to Superman, just sold at auction for $6 million yesterday. A single
Good morning, America. Wow.
A single comic book for $6 million, making it the most valuable comic book in the world. It tops an issue of 1939 Superman number one, which sold for $5.3 million back in 2022. Apparently, Action Comics number one is exceedingly rare, with just 78 copies tracked by the CGC, I should say, the service that authenticates and grades the condition of comic books. The service believes there are around 100 in existence, total out of 200,000 initially printed by national allied publications, became DC Comics. So
tell me more about your issue with Superman. He's not my favorite, but I don't necessarily have a beef with him.
He's so damn boring and white bread. There's no real like drama to Superman, right?
His parents got blown up.
What's that?
His parents got blown up.
Oh, big deal. He's basically bulletproof. He can fly. He's got super strength. He's got heat rays. He's got cold breath. I mean, the one thing against him is, some type of gemstone causes him to lose power. It's like, come on now. He's just boring and vanilla. That's my beef with Superman, is there's no intrigue to the character. There's no like backstory that makes me want to identify with Superman.
I think you're forgetting that he also has the ability to fly so fast he can turn back time and rescue Lois Lane from an earthquake.
I forgot about that. There's nothing that he can't do, it seems like.
It's really one of the worst climaxes of a movie. It's like, really? You turn the rotation the other way and time goes backwards?
Yes. That's how it works. That's how time travel works.
That's not how things work.
If you'd seen Back to the Future, you know that's what Marty McFly does as well. He drives a DeLorean so fast it turns.
You know what? That's more believable. Getting into a damn DeLorean and fly and turning and going back in time. I can buy that more than I can buy reversing the rotation of the planet.
But yeah, that's my beef with Superman. 217-629-7970. Overrated superheroes. The other thing about how easy it is for him to disguise himself also bugs me. The fact that all he has to do is put glasses on and no one sees the similarity between Clark Kent and Superman, that also bugs me a little bit. Other superheroes have to like jump through all these hoops to you know, make sure their secret identity is never shown. But Superman just goes, well, I'm just going to put glasses on and be boring me and no one will know the difference.
In a suit.
Yeah, a suit, and all of a sudden, and also, too, and all of a sudden now he's also a reporter. And why is it that superheroes always work for newspapers? Is the other thing, too. Is that apparently that was the big thing back when they were first introduced, because Spider-Man is also, takes photographs for the Daily Bugle there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so it's like, that's my beef with Superman. It bugs me that he's the one that has, and I understand the rarity of the comic itself. The fact that there's not that many left around, that drives up the value.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a Superman comic that has the record, for some reason, it bugs me more than it should. I don't know.
Well, I can at least appreciate, okay, here's really kind of the archetype of what a superhero is. Somebody went through some sort of tragedy early in life or something happened that changed them on this new path, the hero's journey, and they feel like they've got to right all the wrongs. So it sort of starts that story of the modern myth of superheroes. So I can understand the value of it. I'm surprised you don't have a bigger beef with Aquaman.
Oh, but that's an easy target. I mean,
okay, all right,
he's
all right,
not, he's not overrated because everybody makes fun of Aquaman.
Okay.
Aquaman has been made fun of so much, to be honest with you, Johnny, that there's kind of been a turn in the in the comic book community of just feeling so sorry for him for being bagged on for so long, and rightfully so. I mean, unless someone is drowning, Aquaman's not a lot of help to you when it comes to things. So I don't have as much beef with Aquaman as others do because he's just been made fun of for so long. You just go, God, I feel sorry for you. Now, let me ask you this. I waver back and forth with Batman. I think sometimes Batman gets more flowers than he actually deserves because he's actually just a rich weirdo at the end of the day.
Yeah, Batman's an interesting one because he doesn't, well, he doesn't, he's a superhero without powers.
His power is his money and his, I guess he does have a pretty good intellectual capacity and an ability to solve mysteries because he's kind of a detective at heart. But you're right, he's a superhero without any superpowers, which is why I think he gets more flowers than he deserves because people are so like, oh, that could be me if only I had money.
Well, it can be you. Any superhero can be you. First, your parents have to be slaughtered in a horrible way.
Correct.
That's usually the first thing that needs to happen. And you've got to be a loner.
Yes, yes. Or you have to be like a person out of time, like Captain America, right? He is one where he's doing something for his country and he gives the ultimate sacrifice. And then he's, you know, re-found years later, and he's, you know, to your point, he is kind of alone in that particular instance. Also, part of it to be a superhero is when your parents get horribly murdered or your loved one, they have to give you a nugget of advice that sticks with you the rest of your time as a superhero, i.e., with great power comes great responsibility.
Did Scooby-Doo have a name when he was teamed up with the Blue Falcon?
Yes, he was.
Oh, was it Dynamite?
Yes,
no, that was his.
Yes, yes, that was not Scooby-Doo. It looked incredibly like Scooby-Doo, but in fact, it was not. That was Dynamite and Blue Falcon. And what a Dynamite drop you have right there, Johnny. That takes me back to the USA Cartoon Express Sunday mornings on cable with Dynamite and Blue Falcon.
I thought that was Scooby-Doo. There's no Scooby-Doo connection.
Scooby-Doo and him ran into each other, but they're not related. It's not like Scooby-Dumb? Was that actually one of Scooby-Doo's cousins? Was Scooby-Dumb?
Probably.
Wasn't he the one that had like that wore the hat and just kind of like fell into things?
Yeah, like a hillbilly.
Yeah, he was Scooby-Dumb, and then so I think the only kind of relationship, the only kind of relative Scooby-Doo had was Scrappy-Doo and Scooby-Dumb. I don't think Dynamite was related, although they looked similar. Dynamite was gray. And Dynamite also was like Inspector Gadget, basically.
Right.
That was the other part of the whole equation. And it's, I don't know. Go ahead.
According to the Scoobypedia, the Wikipedia for Scooby, Scooby-Dum, D-U-M, is Scooby-Doo's cousin. He lives with Ma and Pa Skillet in the Hokey-Fanoke Swamp of southern Georgia, you know, where all the dums come from.
I love that was perfectly acceptable, and no one raised a red flag back in the day. They're like, yeah, we got this hick character. What do we name him? I don't know. You know, the dumbs are from there. Just name him Scooby Dumb.
From the Hokey Fanoke Swamp. That's amazing.
I'm here as Scooby Dumb. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he had like the buck teeth and the weird hat. And he just, he just had that draw.
He was an absolute mess.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like Scooby Dumb made Scrappy Doo acceptable. Like people who had.
Wait.
Go ahead.
Scooby Doo, not a genius. I mean, we're talking about a brilliant dog here. So how do you go down from that?
You got a pot smoking dog doing Scooby snacks with Shaggy in the back of the van. And he's the genius compared to Scooby Dumb. Yeah.
When you really think about it, Scooby-Doo is an idiot.
Yes. He more often than not just fell into solving the crimes. And he still...
He didn't want to be there. He didn't like it. He did nothing. He was just an idiot.
Easily frightened. Didn't know how to conduct a chase. Ended up in random doors that went nowhere. But yet...
as a speech impediment.
Right. But yet, he's the bright one.
And he's the bright one. He's the shining star of the family.
Yes, as opposed to Scooby Dumb. And now that you talk about all of that, Scrappy-Doo is the brightest out of all of them.
Scrappy actually had it together, didn't he?
He did. He did. For as much flack that he's gotten. I think
Scrappy was adopted.
In the Doo family, in the Doo and Dumb family, Scrappy is the smartest of them all. I'm glad we came to that, finally giving up.
Your overrated superhero.
Yes, exactly. Scooby-Doo is your overrated superhero, ladies and gentlemen. It is Mike and Molson with you here on WMAY. Hope your Friday is going well thus far. This Friday, April 5th, it is Mike Wimacher, joined by Johnny Molson. I may be kind of dampening your fun, though, with this next topic of albums that are turning 30 in 2024. And one of which is being celebrated by the band while on tour this summer is Green Day's Dookie. They're playing that album in its entirety this summer while on tour. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that Green Day's, like the song When I Come Around, Basket Case, Longview, those are 30 years old. Is that as difficult for you, Johnny, to kind of wrap your head around as it is for me, a devout Green Day fan?
It's pretty incredible. And this is the kind of thing that I think about when you hear the usual gripe of there's nothing good. There's nobody out now that is just like the Rolling Stones or something. And you can never really see it in. Would you have thought in 1994 that Green Day would still be a band 30 years later? I mean, that is a long time to be together. And so you have to go. That's a band. That's a band that has staying power, just like the Rolling Stones did. I mean, I'm not comparing the two, but it's like if the question is, will there be a band that has staying power? You don't know it in real time.
No, you don't, because even as a devout Green Day fan, if you would have told me, yeah, Green Day is going to be around 30 years later, not only going to be around, they're going to be making new music, I would have been like, yeah, I don't know about all of that. Another album.
You too.
Yes. Yes. Another one, they're no longer a band because one of the members passed away, but an album celebrating 30 years this year is the Beastie Boys' Ill Communication. And that one,
wow.
That had Sabotage, it had Roots Down, Sure Shot, and to just think about the fact that, you know, that video that has Cochise and everyone else talks about, you know, being kind of all over MTV at the time, is now 30 years old. It's hard for me. Also turning 30 this year, Weezer's Blue album. Think about that for a moment, right? Remember when Buddy Holly, the music video came out, and how cutting edge everyone thought that was?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they had put Weezer inside Happy Days. It's hard for me. It's hard for me to kind of wrap my head around. Outside of the rock genre, as far as albums turning 30 this year. Here's one for you. TLC's Crazy Sexy Cool.
Oh, wow.
Turns 30 years old this year. The lead single, Creep, was there. So think about that just for a moment of TLC being around. That's another band still touring despite, you know, Left Eye not being around anymore. But would you ever have thought that 30 years down the road that TLC would be a band that just recently played the Illinois State Fair?
Yeah, right.
Here's one that's going to blow you away as far as albums turning 30 years old. Because it was such a cultural phenomenon in its time. Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rearview celebrates 30 years this year. Now,
boy, that thing burned white hot too when it came out.
Oh my God, did it not? Although I think Hootie and the Blowfish became kind of the forebearer for bands to be very popular very quickly and then be the butt of jokes for years to come.
Well, it definitely invented, I think, a genre of sort of dude rock, this sort of safe, it's rock, but it's not rock. It's, you know, it's your hat on backwards, sort of a, you know, it was kind of its own thing. And you saw, again, Smash Mouth, you saw right. these bands come that just had their own lane of just bros, you know, bros.
Yeah, but I also think they were ones that everyone liked, and then it was cool to make fun of. So it's like, there was Hootie and the Blowfish, and then came, like, Creed into your Nickelback. Like, Hootie and the Blowfish, to me, was the first time I'd experienced somebody get so popular, and immediately then everyone was like, it's popular to make fun of them. Like, even though people had that in their arsenal on their, you know, their CD holder, it was like, Hootie and the Blowfish, what a bunch of, to your point, bro rock, or what a bunch of idiots, that kind of thing. They kind of were the forebearers of a trend that we then saw 5 years later with Creed and then Nickelback, where it's cool to hate on this band that was once super popular.
And it's funny to see Darius Rucker sing a Hootie song. Because my first instinct was like, hey, where do you get off singing Hootie and the Blowfish? Oh, that's right, it's you.
Yeah, right. Or I always love people that just call him Hootie. Yeah. Like they just think he is Hootie. Like, they don't know his actual real name is Darius Rucker. And they're like, hey, Hootie, play me that song that you do.
Never leave it down, man.
Yeah, no. Another album that's turning 30 this year, The Offspring, Smash.
Oh, yeah.
That was another one that burned white hot. But to think both Green Day and The Offspring, they first came out, I don't think in a million years you thought that those bands would still be around today, putting out new music and touring. Like, to your point, you think, when you think of seminal bands that have been around forever, you think, you know, Rolling Stones, you think maybe the band U2. Mm-hmm. But now you got to start thinking The Offspring, the hey, why don't you get a job, the pretty fly for a white guy band, is a seminal rock band that's been around for 30 years. Another album turning 30 this year is Oasis's debut album, Definitely Maybe.
Whoo, man. Yeah. And it's a good album.
It is. It is. A Supersonic, Live Forever. I mean, they had a bit of a run there before the fact that the brothers hate each other so much that they eventually flamed out. Another one, Madonna's Bedtime Stories, turns 30 this year. Looking through this list, Hole, their debut album, Live Through This. You also have Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral, turning 30 years old this year. So the closer song is 30. So if you are, you know, of a certain age, that means you were probably conceived to that song.
Yeah, I love the idea that Nine Inch Nails could qualify to be on the oldies station now. 80s, 90s, and now.
Isn't that, to think about that for a moment, just to transplant yourself when your dad was listening to the Beach Boys on the oldies station. Yeah. Now I want to Do You Like an Animal would be the equivalent of, you know, my little Deuce Coupe or whatever it may be.
Coming up this hour, we've got Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. We've got Huey Lewis in the news and Nine Inch Nails. We'll get your toes tapping.
Remember those days? Remember the high school dance with the Nine Inch Nails, Downward Spiral? It's coming up next. The Sock Hop. And finally here, you can find the whole list, you know, various different ones. Yard Barker had a whole list of things. But another one that sticks out to me is Johnny Cash American Recordings turns 30 this year. That was when he first partnered with Rick Rubin and kind of had himself a bit of a career rejuvenation at that time. And boy, those Johnny Cash albums done with Rick Rubin, there is a visceral emotion in the voice of the man in black in those particular albums that are really, I still listen to them to this day.
Yeah.
It is Mike Wimacher here with Johnny Molson. We'll take our final break of the program. When we come back, I don't know if you've heard this or not, Johnny, or the listening public, but there is a big thing happening in the sky on Monday.
And no kidding.
Yeah. We'll talk about it and see how excited you are about it and what your plans are to maybe possibly view it. It's all
better get Jennifer Fluzinski's DC.
Hamburger.
Mike Wimacher and Johnny Molson wrapping up the show here for this Friday, April 5th. Don't forget, Mike and Molson, Too Good for Radio podcast. New episode's going to be dropping later on today. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe. Find it wherever you find your podcasts, and like Mike and Molson on Facebook as well. I don't know if you realize this, Johnny. We mentioned it before the break, but on Monday, something pretty impressive is going to be happening in the skies as we will be having a total solar eclipse. Are you excited about this particular phenomenon? I know how much you enjoy space and what goes on up there.
It's a pretty remarkable thing, you know. It wouldn't take much. It's amazing that it happens. If the moon were a little smaller or a little further away, none of it would happen. I mean, it is the perfect size to perfectly cover the disk of the sun and create this event.
And they're warning, though, that all these people who are traveling across North America to get the best view of the solar eclipse, by the way, they're saying about 200,000 people will be in Carbondale for this thing. It's craziness.
Just out of curiosity, I looked up to see if there was a hotel room open in Carbondale. There were two rooms left at the Hampton Inn, and they were going for $1,300.
What?
At a Hampton Inn.
In Carbondale. Good Lord.
Well, you know, breakfast is included.
Well, that's true. That's one really tasty waffle they have down there that you have to make yourself and use a cup full of make sure you don't put too much of the batter in that cup to then pour into the actual waffle maker there.
There's a nice plate of wet eggs.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, we're talking about a path that's about 115 miles wide.
That's what they said. Yeah.
Stretching from Texas to Maine, we're still unclear as to how much cloud cover there's going to be on Monday.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're saying because the size of the sun is unknown, the width of the zone of totality may be slightly narrower than previously predicted. So some spots that were previously believed to be within the zone may be just outside. Can you imagine driving all that way or making all those plans and you aren't actually in the path of totality? They said this difference would affect cities on the very edge of the path of totality, where blanket predictions are difficult regardless. A few city blocks one way or the other could mean 20, 10, or 0 seconds of totality. They said uncertainty in the Earth's rotation could also affect eclipse predictions on this level. So they say to make sure you have the best chance of seeing the total solar eclipse for as long as possible, an expert recommends getting as close to the center of the zone of totality as possible. Are you planning? Well, I don't know if you're planning the $1,300, but have you made any plans to get closer to the center?
I mean, I will watch the weather on Sunday, and if it's reasonable and I can get in the car and drive there, I might. A quarter million people too. I mean, it's really kind of crazy when you think about this little stretch of land.
Right.
A city the size of Carbondale. I mean, you know, there are some major cities along the way, but there are also just a lot of little farm towns that are just going to be glommed with people.
Well, yeah, they were saying that the Canadian side of Niagara Falls has declared a state of emergency. Because they're expecting around 2 million people to be around there because of not only the falls, but just the fact that that's kind of in the path of totality as well, where it kind of wraps up going forward. If you don't want to get to the center, if you don't want to, like, deal with all those people, you can see part of it, not the whole totality of it. But NASA is going to also offer several hours of streaming online and on NASA TV starting at 1 p.m. for several locations. And they're going to be from several locations along the path of totality. So
where we are in Springfield, we'll be at about 90%. I mean, you will know when it happens.
Yeah, definitely. And they say this will be the last total eclipse visible in the U.S. until 2044. So you got to wait another 20 years for this to happen. Also, by the way, as a public service announcement, don't look directly at it unless you have your eclipse glasses.
Now, I saw on TikTok just the opposite, that it looks the best if you stare right at it for about 10 minutes. Now, is that wrong?
Yes, that is wrong. And it's funny you mentioned that about TikTok. I was listening to a show out of Chicago who were playing a clip from a podcast that the Cleveland Guardians do. And originally, they actually had the game scheduled to be played while the solar eclipse is going on. And so they quickly moved it to where the first pitch now will be after the eclipse has kind of subsided, because what they didn't want to have happen was a fly ball hit up into the air and these dopes out in the outfield looked straight into an eclipse for a second. And they were interviewing one of the players about it. And the player is like, what? I'm not supposed to look at it? And the host of the podcast says, you're messing with me, right? And he goes, no, you're trying to tell you're saying how great this is going to be, and then you're going to tell me I can't look directly at this cool thing that's in the sky?
Well, there's that great video from 2017 of Trump standing at the White House,
yes,
squinting at the thing. Hey, look at this. It's like, so stop what you're doing.
I will also, as a word of warning, I purchased a pair of the official eclipse glasses that they're selling in stores now, which, by the way, they're dated as if it's going to be some type of collector's item to sell on eBay later on. But I tried those things on in the house. They are dark. Like, it is total freaking darkness. Like, I was like, oh, they are not kidding when they said they're darker than normal sunglasses.
Yeah, it's basically the same amount of filtering that welders use when they're right up on top of it. So it's pretty dark for that reason.
Yeah.
But no, it'll be a pretty incredible day, even if it is cloudy. Just that few moments where something just changes and you go, that's weird at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, and they're saying too, they're warning everyone that your pets may freak out as well.
Birds don't like it. Your pets don't like it.
Yeah. So if a bird flies, if you're working at a office building with it, which has many stories, and a bird flies into you, maybe that's the reason why it's a solar eclipse.
Right.
Or all of a sudden, you know, maybe that's a precursor, as we talked about to start the program about the TikTok time traveler. Maybe the solar eclipse is the precursor for that chimp-human hybrid to finally make their appearance.
Yeah, love the conspiracies that are coming with it.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.